Hi, and welcome to NC State's Audio Abstract. I'm Tracy Peake, your host, and today I have Ben Chapman, who is an associate professor and food safety extension specialist here at NC State. Ben is here today to help us barf-proof our holidays.
Thank you, Tracy. Yeah, that's my goal. I want to make sure we've got we get through this holiday season without a lot of foodborne illness.
Now that we have our turkey taken care of, let's move on to some of the side dishes, which are traditionally vegetables or souffles or casseroles, things like that. So in vegetable prep, what are some tips?
When it comes to vegetable prep, we actually, if we go back 15 or 20 years now, if we had this food safety conversation, everything that we would have talked about and like we have up to this point has been about meat. Mm-hmm. Almost all of our illnesses, outbreaks were linked to meat, eggs, dairy.
Right.
And in the mid-1990s, that changed. And what changed was our public health system got better at pinpointing illnesses. Mm-hmm. And fresh fruits and vegetables over those last 20 years have gone from zero on our radar to the most significant source of foodborne illness in the United States and,
wow,
and probably worldwide. And the reason for this, if you know, you think back about vegetable production, mm-hmm, well, it happens in a field. It's outside. I've got water inputs that go into that. I've got animals that are around. There's birds. There are people's hands as they harvest these fruits and vegetables. And every point that those fruits and vegetables touch from the field all the way through to my plate can only really contaminate them. Mm-hmm. And unless I'm cooking them, like we do often at the holidays, I don't have any control as a consumer over the safety of those products. It all happened well before it got to me. And the pathogens typically like to adhere very strongly to them. So even washing lettuce, mm-hmm, does a little bit to, right, reduce risk, but it doesn't eliminate it. It's not like cooking lettuce. And so when I think about salads, mm-hmm, I think about some of our raw vegetable dishes, they also carry risk. And most of my ability as a consumer to manage it is really purchasing it from, you know, safe sources, not getting it from a place where I don't know whether they're asking questions to their farmers or their production system, or, you know, it's grown in my compost heap in my backyard and I'm not really managing food safety.
Right.
So that takes care of some of the fresh side. On the cooked vegetable side dishes, mm-hmm, we don't worry about temperature. We worry about temperatures, not to the same amount. We're looking at 135 degrees.
Okay.
Is sort of our magic number to take care of what we would see in those frozen or fresh vegetables as we cook them. But what we do see as a problem, which is a little different from some of the turkey side of things, is, and this happens in my own family, we have one oven. We, yeah, might have six side dishes. We're constantly moving stuff in and out. Maybe I'm going to do my green bean casserole at 10 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm, and I'm going to let it sit somewhere, and maybe I'll reheat it before we actually consume it at, you know, at dinner time. But I've got 5 or 6 hours where that side dish I have to worry about temperature control. So cooking vegetables and then leaving them on the counter, leaving them at room temperature, that becomes our risk factor,
okay,
not cooking them and then refrigerating them. And we have about a 4-hour window. Mm-hmm. Once that dish drops below 135 degrees, if there are spores or any pathogens that contaminate it, they're going to start to grow. And in some cases, create a heat stable toxin that even when I reheat it, I can't denature it. I can't reduce the risk. And we've had many illnesses, even most classic foodborne illness going back a while has been linked to these. You know, everybody goes to a church dinner, mm-hmm, and eats a casserole dish that wasn't cooled properly or wasn't held at the right temperature and get something called staph toxin poisoning. But yeah, it's a concern, and we see it at holiday season. We see it at other times as well, but
well, yeah,
these dishes.
Yeah, because you just leave them out on the counter and everybody goes back for seconds or thirds, and then maybe they want a snack before bed and the stuff hasn't been put away. So
absolutely,
it's important not only to cook it to the right temperature, but to store and put away the leftovers, or if you're cooking in shifts throughout the day, when you get it out of the oven and it's cooked, you put it in the refrigerator until it's time to reheat it again.
Absolutely. And okay. And that magic piece, and this, you know, I think we'll go into leftovers a little bit in a second, and this is a good connection there, because when we are cooling food, and I have a lot of food, historically, people would say, oh, you have to let that cool on the counter, right? You can't put hot food in a refrigerator. That was probably true in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to be trite, but our technology around refrigerators has changed a little bit. We have, you know, television screens and pictures and lots of things. And so those refrigerators back a long time ago, they would cycle on and off. And if you put a lot of hot food in an old refrigerator, you would overwhelm that system. The fan would burn out. You would have trouble with the refrigerator. Oh. Now, they maintain a very consistent, even temperature all the time. Putting hot food in a refrigerator, not a big deal.
Okay.
Not an issue. Where we have to be careful in this cooling step is having a lot of surface area. So if I put a huge pot of gravy in my refrigerator and I left it there at 36 degrees, it may take 14 or 15 hours or longer if I had 2 gallons of gravy, which seems like a lot of gravy.
Yeah, that's a lot of gravy.
Maybe you got a big family. but that middle, you know, center point of that gravy might take hours and hours to drop below 135 degrees, or sorry, below 41 degrees from 135.
Right.
And that's where we have risk issues. So it's important to take smaller portions, thin pans, stack them with air movement between those pans. What we do with our turkey is we cut it all off immediately and we put it into Ziploc bags and lay them on the rack. But those gallon Ziploc bags give me a guide that I can't put a whole bunch of meat. It's not this like stack of, you know, 8-10 inches of meat. It can only really be a couple inches thick, and allows for a lot of surface area and increases the cooling. So whether it's prepping before or in leftovers, it's really the same issue.
Okay. So we've got the food is cooked. One other question sort of that pertains to side dishes. So a lot of side dishes have dairy in them, like eggs, raw eggs and things like that. The 135 degrees takes care of the egg, correct?
Yeah, it takes care of the salmonella that might be naturally occurring in those eggs. Absolutely. That we're really looking at 100 and a little higher than that to take care of that. Probably in the 140 to 160 range.
Okay.
But 135 to like 135 is still a pretty cool dish. You're typically getting above 145, 150, 160 with any sort of meal preparation at all. It doesn't take a lot to get above that.
Okay. Well, great. So now, since we were mentioning eggs, let's move on to the dessert table. And are there any risks there? Because a lot of times we have just cookies and cakes and pies sitting out for hours and hours. Is that a problem, or is it more with preparation of these dishes?
Well, so bacteria, you know, if we look at time, right, looking about food staying out for a certain amount of time at specific temperatures, bacteria need that, but they also need water to grow. With baked goods, cookies, cakes, pastries, even those that are made with dairy products, cream cheese, icing, meringue, for instance, there's a lot of sugar in those baked goods. And that sugar is acting as our water binder. It's taking all that water, taking it away from not just the pathogens that make us sick, but any of the microorganisms that are going to cause spoilage.
Right.
And so over, you know, as we've developed the process of baking, through trial and error, we've kind of figured out what's happening, and we're sucking that water to that sugar and binding it up. So we don't typically worry so much about baked goods and time temperature control for safety. There are certain cases where we do, like a cream-filled cannoli, where it's a cream, but it's still very moist and maybe not enough sugar in there to bind everything up. So something where you've got that high cream content that doesn't sort of solidify into an icing or a paste or a meringue, that's a different kind of situation. One thing that has popped up, not on the dessert table, but in the preparation of it over the past few years, is this link between raw flour and pathogens, and specifically pathogenic E. coli.
Okay.
And last year, we saw multiple illnesses across the U.S. linked to consuming foods that were made with a specific brand of flour. What the likely risk factors were, weren't eating the baked goods once they'd been baked,
right,
but it was consuming cake batter, cookie dough, you know,
all the fun stuff.
Yeah, all the fun stuff. A really interesting one, and I've got two little kids, and we like to get them involved in cooking and baking, and that's usually one of the enticing parts is, like, you know, lick the cake batter off the spatula. But some of the illnesses were also linked to just handling dough and not washing hands.
Huh.
And so as I think about Christmas cookies and things like that in our family, we want our kids to be part of that. We now, before these outbreaks, it wasn't something that it was on the top of mind to say, you should go wash your hands after that.
Right.
Because you might have been exposed to a pathogen. But the more we look for foodborne pathogens in food, the more we find them and the more we learn about what those risk factors are.
That's surprising. I wouldn't have thought that flour would have been the culprit. You always hear about the raw eggs and all the other things in the cookie dough, but the flour, that's interesting. So essentially, as long as we are washing our hands, cooking our food to the right temperature, and even washing our hands after preparation, not cooking while we're sick, we should be okay. It's not terrible.
We shouldn't be terrified
to go into the kitchen during the holiday season.
No.
Just some simple precautions.
There are billions of meals that are consumed every year that don't make people sick.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, there are millions that do. And we want to be in the billions of safe ones where we're controlling those things. That hand washing, not cross-contaminating, temperature control, both in the cooking process and in the cooling and in storage. Those are the things that we really worry about, that if we look back at these past illnesses and outbreaks, one or more of those things have gone wrong to lead to those illnesses.
We've been speaking with Ben Chapman, Associate Professor and Food Safety Extension Specialist at NC State. I'm Tracy Peake. Thanks for listening to Audio Abstract.